and Saturdays and Sunday from noon to 4 p.m. Again, that's Charles Adams Family and Friends, an art exhibit up through December 13th at the Saruman House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm David Barsamyan, host of Alternative Radio, heard every Tuesday morning at 9 on KBOO. KBOO currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 by a group of generous donors and foundations. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Go to kboo.fm/support to get your donation matched today.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to a song called Hippos. It's composed by Katie Greiser, and it was for Imago Theater. Hey, we're going to talk about Imago Theater and the final run of Zuzu. And Zuzu has been a holiday hit for more than 30 years. I mean, the show has traveled all over the world and delighted thousands upon thousands of families. Imago co-founders and co-artistic directors Jerry Mawat and Carol Triple reminisce about this beloved show, along with the longtime performer from Zuzu, Pratik Motwani. We'll also hear what else is happening this season at Imago, and we'll have a pair of tickets to offer for a membership. If you haven't had a chance to contribute to our winter drive, then go to kboo.fm right now, kboo.fm. Click the donation jar, and you can win a pair of tickets to the December 11th, this opening night show at 7 p.m. of Zuzu. So lots of fun to be had, so stay with us. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. It's a live show, and here with me are Carol Triffle. Hello. Welcome
Hi.
Back. And Jerry Mawat. Welcome
Hi.
Back. And Pratik Motwani.
Hello, hello.
Welcome, welcome. Yeah. Hey, all from Imago Theater, and we're going to be talking about Zuzu. So, you know, thanks for walking across the street to come to KBOO today. Welcome to Station Studio. So, Jerry and Carol, it's been a while since I've had you in the studio. And I talked with Pratik, actually, 2 years ago. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. Yep.
And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, and my memory kind of plays tricks on me sometimes, but I thought that was the final run of Zuzu. Was that?
Well, we have,
what happened? Is that?
I can explain that.
Okay.
Actually, the shows, the culmination of our mask theater productions are kind of, they overlap, but Frogs and Zuzu are the primary shows.
Yeah, it was a cross, that show, right?
Zuzu is a cross. Okay. Frogs came first, then Big Little Things, and then we took the best of both and created Zuzu. But the reason was is that at that time we were, you know, wanting to close this kind of mask genre work that we're
right.
doing, and we were working on a piece called La Belle, which is an adaptation of Beauty and the Beast. We intended to open that show and to replace this particular genre for our national touring audiences. But it turns out La Belle is taking 3 years to build. And so
yeah, I was
in order to keep our
too.
Company going, we had to keep these works going another 2 years.
Well, I think the family shows has always helped to support the more adventurous shows that you do that aren't necessarily family shows. And La Belle sounded interesting, Carol, and I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I want to talk to you more about that. I love Beauty and the Beast, so I'm looking forward to that. So thank you for explaining that, because I thought, oh no, was that the last time or was so? But this is the final time.
Yeah, this
okay.
is because, you know, one major thing we did to ensure that it's the final time is to turn that, well, that our agency in New York is not offering it nationally. And that's a
so
big
you're just thing. Not taking more tours after this then?
La Belle is going on a national
oh,
tour.
Oh, okay. Okay. So is this the final time we're going to see Zuzu anywhere?
Well, could, unless you
it,
go.
Yeah, but it could also go in, like, do a sit-down run in a theater. Okay. In other parts of the United States, but it's not going to tour one night stands, wow. And that's how it's been doing.
It's got one more national tour that's coming up. When do you guys go out?
I think end and till March.
Yeah, March, and then it closes.
And that's with you, Pratik,
yes.
For the national tour.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it does seem a little there's a little poignancy to this for you guys saying goodbye, finally, to this particular show, and. It's been running as a combination of other shows for 30 years.
Yeah, it really started in 1979. Yeah. Carol and I were...
I mean, that's the first show then. That's when you started the company, right?
Frogs was the first show.
Yeah. Started in 79. Carol and I had a two-bedroom apartment, and we were... The whole place was a mess of paper mache and foam and all kinds of things. And from that, we built small little pieces that eventually... led to larger pieces that eventually led to us enticing a pretty prominent agent that was representing a lot of physical theater comedians around the country. And from that, which was 1986, kind of launched our careers we were just touring the Northwest, and then the next year we started touring internationally. So it was quite a fast climb.
Well, you also, on the blog at Imago's site, there's a kind of a fun story that you tell about that agent seeing the show at the World Trade Center.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us that story about how, you know, the tickets and the audience response.
Sure. So I met Arthur Schaffman, who unfortunately died 2 years ago. He was a prominent agent that represented Moomin Chance, Red Skeleton, and also. I went to a conference in Seattle. And he said, send him a video. I did. And then he said, well, you know, I can't take you on unless I see a show. And we didn't have a show booked for a year. So we didn't want to wait a year. So we booked the World Trade Center, and we put a little ad in the Willamette Week, said free tickets. And we sold that out like pretty quickly.
It was like 200 people.
Yeah,
just.
Yeah. And everyone in the audience knew it was all free, but he didn't know. So he came. The audience was highly enthusiastic, probably because it was free and it was exciting. And then we went out to dinner with him afterwards, and he asked, are audiences always that excited? And Carol and I nodded silently.
Yeah.
And then from there, we signed with him.
Well, you know, that's such a cute story, because we all want that to happen. So, this is the way it always is, right? This is the audience response. But I'm sure, Pratik, you've had really good audience response that's similar to that.
Yes. Yes. This show is, you know, the thing about the show is that it's 30 years old, and different performers have contributed their work into it. And so it's a foolproof show. I mean, that you're going to get a good response. Obviously, you have to hit the right notes with the performance, but structurally it's a great show.
I think also I'm sorry.
Well, you know, different performers make it funny, and some make it poignant, and some they just add different things. Pratik makes it really funny, I have to tell you.
he's
worth the price of the ticket just to see him run around on stage.
Yeah, we do quite extensive auditions. We used to go to New York every year to cast, but we discovered, because of the influx of young people in Portland, that there's a lot of talent here. Pratik came to us from the Del Arte School in California, and we quickly recognized that he's one of the top physical performers in the United States or the world, and because of that, we snapped him up.
Wow. So, Pratik, are you going to be moving to Portland, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe in the future. But as of now, I'm working with the company. I'm touring a lot. In my breaks, I make my own work, which is in Northern California. My kind of relations with people are there. But I have started developing a lot of work relations in Portland as well. And I would like to move in the future.
Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds like it might be a plan.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, also on the blog, Jerry, there's something I'm going to read from the Zuzu blog, because I found it incredibly moving, because there's something about mask theater that I think is so unique in the world of theater. We as humans have been transfixed by the magic of sorcery, the incantations of the shaman, and the magic of the secular performance. Each exhibited their presentation in the light of a cave fire with a prop, a doll, a puppet or a mask. The only thing at their disposal was the play of light in the darkness, or maybe a hidden string. It is this desire to enter a transformational world that cannot easily be explained by knowledge, some would say science, that is one of the strongest cultural desires. That's beautifully put. Did you write that?
I did.
Would you elaborate on what that means to you?
Well, I think it's quite simple. It's like there is something magical in a puppet or a mask that is a phenomena that I don't think we can explain. And it came to me when I saw my mentor, Richard Hayes Marshall, who performed a mask on the back of his head for literally 10 seconds. I was 20, I think, and he did that. And as I wrote in the blog, I don't know if it was that particular one, I was kind of transported to, for want of a better term, the other side of life. Something that was quite hidden, but always there and quite magical. And, you know, with all the influx of technology, all the abilities that we have to see films and how television exploded into all these major TV series and all, I don't think that it will ever compete with this phenomena of mask or puppet theater that can simply transport you without any use of technology whatsoever.
Because you think about all the CGI animation that's in films, and that's beautiful, it's fun to go to, but when you see someone like Pratik with a mask, you know, you are transported because, you know, you have to realize that that's an actor. You know,
yes.
That's an actor doing this. But the other part of you is saying, wow, you know, I'm there.
Yeah.
So that's the fun part of it, isn't it?
Yes. Especially with mask work, I think, and puppetry and shadow puppetry, you can see it. You can see when a mask transports you. It's not rocket science. You know, the audience can feel it. And that's the beauty of it, that there's a human being behind it with a skill or with that's putting life into the thing rather than a technology.
Yeah, I think wherever the human species goes with technology, there is something about everything that you can touch with your hands and you can see in front of you. I mean, we're everyone's living both in a virtual world and a real world now. And the real world in some ways is competing with the virtual world, but personally, I don't think the virtual world will win.
So, Carol, when you and Jerry met and you were doing mask work together, did you have those same impulses as far as that whole transformational journey?
I think that all nonverbal communication reaches the public differently, and you can reach somebody with a mask or with a gesture that says something different to every person, and that's what I always liked about that, and that's what our mentor Jack LeCocq explained and helped me understand, that observe the world and everyone comes back with a different idea, and then you're open to all those ideas. And sometimes, you know, some person will look at maybe a frog on stage and be afraid. Another person will be like, "Oh, that's really funny." So I guess in some way I was transformed by it, but I don't look at it so mystically as Jerry. I see it more as live theater is for everyone, and everyone is touched differently by it.
And it sounds like it's the human emotional response that you're more intrigued by.
I really like things to be funny.
Yeah,
too. I mean, I try really hard to be serious sometimes, but it always ends up kind of funny, no matter what. I try to be ugly. I try to be sad. I try to do all this stuff. But you can't be funny without being all those things too. Somebody has to have a disaster for you to go, oh.
It's all mixed in, isn't it? It's part of life. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. My guests are Carol Triffel, Jerry Mawat, and Pratik Motwani from Imago Theater. We're talking about the final run of Zuzu, which begins December 11th and runs through January 3rd in Portland. And showtimes are all over the place, but we are giving away a pair of tickets for the December 11th show. If you can call in with your membership, you could call in right now at 503-231-8032 and win a pair of tickets for your membership at KBOO. So Tickets are also available by calling Imago at 503-231-9581. That's 231-9581, or online at ticketswest.com. And you can also call their box office at 503-224-8499 at Tickets West. And for more info, go to imagotheater.com. And if you missed any of the show so far, you can hear the podcast later today at stageandstudio.org. And I just wanted to ask Pratik, how long have you been performing Zuzu?
This is my third season, so it's been, I think, 3 years.
3 years.
Yeah, 2.5, more than that. Yeah.
And what animals have you played?
All of them, I think.
Name some.
Frogs, hippos, penguins, polar bears. Concertina, which is not an animal, but it's
an accordion. Right.
Yeah.
Cats is fun.
What's your favorite animal?
It changes, you know, season to season.
Yeah.
You kind of.
So far, what's your favorite animal for this one?
I'm having a lot of fun playing the cat.
And oh, really?
It says something about me, I think.
So the cat piece was a new piece that we created a couple of years ago, but we play on the concept of cats in a house that hear a radio come on, and then when some very upbeat music plays, they kind of jump into a nightclub scene. So we're playing with the concept of how we see our pets in our own house, and also the crazy personalities of the domestic cat.
So I'm imagining my cat's listening to us right now on the radio and jumping around and stuff. So you know, it's part of that whimsical fun, you know, that the mask work has that really brings out, I don't know, is it the child in you or is it just the imaginative part of you? What do you think, Carol? What
I think with the mask, whenever you play around with the mask, you always try to think of what wouldn't this thing do, and then do it. So that's like everybody wants to be surprised in life, and a mask will allow you to do that much quicker than speaking will.
So it really does, doesn't it? It frees you up to laugh or to have a response.
Yeah, it frees you up to do like you said, like a cat would not be sexy doing a jazz dance, and that's what they're doing, you know. But in your mind, you're like, oh yeah, they.
That could be
that
sexy.
That works.
In my mind, it's great. So, Pratik, what's the strangest audience reaction you've had in touring?
Well, there are a couple of things that are strange. Like sometimes you get a laugh at something that you don't expect it at all, and you sometimes don't know what you did because you're inside the mask, and then you're searching for it again, and you can't find it. So that's surprising. Why did they laugh at that, and what happened there? That's one. The second is with kids shows, sometimes their imagination goes wild. And so they'll shout something that's totally unrelated to the show in a very silent moment. Like, I remember this one show when this kid went, "We believe in you, Gary." And
Gary?
Yeah, we don't know what that means, but to him, it meant something.
I want a bumper sticker like that. We believe in you, Gary.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Did it throw you at all, or did you just laugh inside the cat head?
We did laugh inside the mask.
Whatever mask it was. It just,
the show's toured to Jordan, Egypt, and France in the last couple of years. So did you have unusual responses there?
Yeah.
Yes, different. That's the different places. People laughed at different places, and some places where we go, especially in penguins, you know, kids shout different things. You know, they may shout "fight, fight, fight, fight," or "cheater, cheater." So you get different responses. But the thing that you learn from it is that what is it that's universally funny, or you know, what is culturally funny. And what is universally funny, especially when you travel abroad to places like Egypt and Jordan, and you see the physical humor and how it cuts across the board. And I think that's a very special thing about this show.
Yeah, I was touring in Taiwan, and we played all over, but I think this notion came to me at the National Theater. It was a beautiful, elaborate theater in Taipei. But I realized that for an hour and a half, I was communicating with 1,000 people, but after the show, I couldn't ask for a cup of coffee. So it really demonstrates that the universal language with humans is movement.
Just ask, oh yeah, coffee next time.
Right.
But yeah, that's the whole beauty of it is that, you know, I'm often kind of envious, you know, as a playwright, you can't really have your work translated unless, you know, it's translated right. in the language and not have, you know, it's not universal, but you do physical theater and dance theater or mask theater and people, you don't have to speak the language, right?
Yeah.
That is something beautiful about that universality. Yes. Pratik, last time you were here, we talked about you. You had it talked about you doing a voice job for Slumdog Millionaire.
That's
do you remember
true,
that?
Yes.
So,
remember.
So what else is going on with you in the other acting world?
There's a lot going on right now. So yes, I'm touring with Imago, and then in the breaks, like I said, I make my own work. So my show, I have a show called Intense, a conservation comedy that I have created and act in. And that show was recently performed, was picked up by the U.S. Embassy and performed in Egypt.
Wow.
At the Afka Festival, which Imago performed a couple of years ago.
Wow.
At. So
you're performing there in
That's
Egypt?
My own show.
Right.
That
right.
was performed.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then it was also performed at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And so that show is kind of picking up, and we have a whole tour coming up in Denver in April with that show. Then there are a couple of other shows that I'm creating that's in developmental process right now because, you know, because of the success of Intense, it's given me an opportunity to create the other work. And there's a film coming out in which I'm there. It's called Mary Jane the Musical, and it's about the...
I wonder what that's about. Not sure.
Yeah. It's legal here, right?
Yeah, it's totally legal, and it sounds like it's going to be totally fun, too.
It is fun film.
Yeah.
It's based in Northern California,
uh-huh.
and it's the Dell'Arte company has this musical called Mary Jane the Musical that
Wonderful.
They've been performing, but it's been converted into a film. So that film will be coming out this summer, in which
big,
I pay a
news.
Yoga instructor.
Oh, do you do yoga?
Yes,
oh,
I do,
that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
That's helpful. Well, congratulations on all that. We'll
Thank
look
you.
For Mary Jane the Musical, especially.
Yeah.
the final run of Zuzu, which runs in Portland from December 11th through January 3rd. Tickets are available by calling Imago at 503-231-9581 or ticketswest.com. And you can also find more info at Imago Theater. That's with an RE.com. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to a performance of Zuzu. I don't know if it's gone yet. We'll find out. If you go online at actually kboo.fm and become a member or add to your membership, you can get a pair of tickets there. And you can help us oil the squeaky chairs in the studio right now. I'm TMA Roberts, Stage and Studio. We have a few minutes left, and I'm here with Carol Triffel and Jerry Mawat and Pratik Motwani from Imago Theater. And I really want to find out what the next original show is going to be. And Jerry, tell us about the next show with based on Yukio Mishima's work. Is that
correct?
Yeah,
it's a fascinating piece that actually comes from, according to our dramaturge, Larry Commence, who's a professor at Portland State University, it comes from written in 1005 by, I'm sorry, I don't know her name, but it's a very prominent piece of literature. Larry says the most prominent piece of literature in Japan, The Tales of Genji. Basically, that was written in 1005, and then somewhere in the 1400s, it was made into a no drama, and then Mishima wrote a contemporary version of it in the mid-50s that he was actually trying to take to Broadway, but never made it. But basically, it's about, I don't want to give too much away, but it's about a woman that's madly in love with a man, and the man is married and has fallen in love with his wife, even though he was not in love with her before. But when she goes to bed, she is so filled with jealousy and just passion for him that she manifests what's considered in Japan a living ghost, meaning when she sleeps, this living ghost is manifested. And this manifested ghost goes to this hospital where the lady is being treated, and she's trying to kill her. So
this is very adult.
adult.
Yeah, it's adult
themes and adult content. Is it going to be in Japanese theater style then, or is it? Are you taking a modernistic approach?
No,
to
it's definitely a modern approach. We've hired a percussionist named Blade Rogers, who's a Western percussionist. But we're working to try to get kind of a fusion sound with it.
Okay.
So it'll be a Western piece influenced from Japanese forms.
And that's happening in March, is that correct?
Yes, it opens in March.
Okay. And Carol, you're doing a new original work too, and it's called Cloud.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so it's not completely written.
It's in the clouds.
It's in the clouds, and it's about clouds, and it's about a movie called Cloud.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of cloud information, and
it sounds very floaty right now.
Yeah, well, I got 60 pages still.
Hey,
I'm gonna get some more.
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, some pages have 10 words, but
I never thought of that.
You do play format, you know.
Write a book. Here's chapter one word.
Right. So, and there is some music in it, some songs that kind of propel the story into kind of an absurdity. And it's about three women who are sisters. One of them wants to be an actress and actually gets into the movie Cloud. And then they find out about more of their siblings that they didn't know they had. So it's about a family. It's funny.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like you're bringing the whimsy into it, right?
Definitely does.
Yeah. I mean, you two seem to balance each other out. I think Jerry used to have more kind of somber, serious kind of themes, and Carol brings kind of the fun and the
whimsy. Well, I try to be serious, and I do really believe that. I do believe that my work does come from
a
serious
to it. Yes. Yeah.
That you could never get funny without.
But you feel like you need the sad and the funny to go together.
I can't do it. I don't know how to do it any other way.
Yeah.
I think Carol's work touches on the use of clown theater within text-based work. But Carol and I discovered years ago, especially with performers that we auditioned for Frogs and Zuzu, that a good comedian needs to have a life of suffering before they become a comedian.
Definitely. Yes.
So a lot of young performers that come to us that maybe have a sense of comedy, but not a lot of depth, we kind of, in the back discussions of auditions, we go, well, they haven't really suffered enough yet.
I mean, laughing and crying are kind of like almost the same thing, aren't they?
It can be.
You know, it's really riding that line. So I totally get that. We're coming to the close here, and this is going to be a tough question for you. You've been running Imago since 1979, and it feels like, you know, theater is burgeoning right now. I mean, it's just exploded with companies and lots of new talent. What do you forecast for the future? Is this going to continue, you know? Are we going to be, you know, draining the audience pool? What do you think is going to be happening in the next few years here in Portland?
Are you talking about for Imago or for everyone?
You know, either one, whatever you want to do.
I can only speak for myself. So,
okay.
I like Portland. I like to give Portland my work. And so I will continue to do that. I've thought about, you know, what would I do if I wasn't doing this, and I would be a very bored and sad person. So
I'm sorry, that wasn't funny. But why did I laugh? I'm sorry.
So see, there you go.
But you have a dry wit to you.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
And
yeah.
So like I continue to see it. I like that there's new talent always coming to Portland and opening theaters, and whether they're successful or not, it does add to the general ambience of Portland being a unique and viable place. And so, you know, I see it happening till I can't do it anymore. And I'm pretty sure Jerry is also planning to do that himself.
Well, actually, you know, Portland is like, so, you know, the world is changing so fast, and Portland seems to be changing faster because it's just the last five years. It's a boom, right? So it's very hard to know where things are going. What's enchanting for me is discovering more and more interesting artists in town. And, you know, a couple of years ago, or even last year, I was like, you know, it doesn't feel like the Portland I knew in the 70s, and it's not the Portland of the 70s. And I've just come to terms. Yeah, I've just come to terms like, well, this is a new city.
And this is, we're going to go with it. And I hope, Pratik, you join, you move here and you become part of one of the new artists here.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm very excited.
Well, Pratik Motwani, Jerry Mawad, Carol Triffel, we wish you continued success and a great final run of Zuzu. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Before we go, a quick announcement. The Dissenter's Handbook, it's a collection of riotous tales directed by Samantha Vanda Merva at Shaking the Tree Theater, starring Matthew Carrigan in a one-man show. The show runs through December 26th at Shaking the Tree Theater, and you can find out more about it at shaking-the-tree.com and call them at 503-235-0635 and just check out just Google Shaking the Tree. Matthew Carrigan's worth it. That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org. You can also download shows at iTunes and like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. We're going to go out with another song by composer Katie Greiser from another Imago show. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
You're tuned to 90.7 KBOO Radio, and we have a fun community announcement. Climate and environmental groups will rally and march this Saturday, December 12th, as part of a global day of action, the day after the Paris climate talks end. Marchers will meet on the East Bank Esplanade under the Tillicum Crossing behind the Portland Opera House at 11:30 a.m. There will be a rally at 12 o'clock p.m. and at 12:30 p.m. there will be a march with creative visuals across Tillicum Crossing. For more information, go to 350pdx.org. Stay tuned for Art Focus following this.
I'm Sonny Blechinger, KBOO's Artist in Residence for 2015. Hope you'll join us at the Clinton Street Theater December 10th, Thursday night at 7 p.m. for the broadcast of my radio play, The Pool. It's about four swimmers who happen to use the same pool at the same time every week. It'll be broadcast with new video by local filmmaker Lincoln Baron Holmes and hosted by the comedians from America.